Welcome, everybody, to another Low Standards and Pours podcast. My name's Eric, and it is episode 13. We're gonna talk a little bit about, are you a rich man? What qualifies you as a rich man? And also, video.
Baby, I'm a rich man.
Yes, baby, I'm a rich man. And videos, how have they changed our life? The video on the cell phone. Pretty interesting. Won't you say there, El Carpe?
I have no idea. Say it again. We're talking about what constitutes you rich.
Yeah, what constitutes that you're a rich man?
Well, that's going to be a fun one. What was the other part of this topic? Something about music.
After that, if we make it through that, we'll talk about a little bit about how video has changed our perception of what happens in our life every day, and how it's starting to affect us. So I thought that might be kind of interesting to talk about. It is July 3rd, about 8:44 on a Friday evening. Bill and I have no friends other than each other, so we are just hanging out here about 45 miles apart, and it's a beautiful night in Detroit, and we're happy to have you guys.
Hey, you're stretching it a little bit, saying that I'm your friend.
I know. It sounds like a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Well, how was your day today, Bill?
Oh, man. Talk about exhausting. I had a good time with my ma.
Yeah. You know,
that whole story. She's got a little bit of the dementia. And
yeah.
So it's been interesting. But we went and took a drive and hung out together. Took her out just to, you know, get outside of the house. Bought some lunch, brought it back to the house to eat, you know, just basic stuff, trying to be as safe as we can because, you know, she's 83 years old and I don't want her around other people. So, but we had to you know, get her out of the house, get her moving around.
She loves you for sure.
Well, you know, that's another story.
She loves you unconditionally, of course, but she loves you even more for getting her out and buzzing around and doing something. Assuming you had the day off today?
I did. Well,
that's good.
I slept
good.
In until 8:15.
That's good. Yeah. That's good.
That's huge for me.
I go to bed. I try to go to bed by midnight, and I'm up by about 7-ish. I think you're probably a little bit later than I am, but regardless, it does feel good to sleep in once in a while.
Yeah. So, and then we went and had dinner at my in-laws.
Anything good?
Outdoor. Oh my God! It's just so hot this afternoon. 9 degrees, sunny. It was nice, you know, being with people. But, you know, we're all sitting in the backyard 6 feet away.
Yeah.
Chairs and, you know, masks and, you know, just this is just so ridiculous and crazy. I'm fed up with it, but I know we have to do the right stuff in order to keep this from getting into the rest of the world. So,
it sounds like Whitmer's going to go back to phase three, eh? So to keep
We might as well. People are going to keep being stupid.
Yeah, you know? Safe. Sorry.
So, hey, nonsense. Thanks for sharing us. Good to see you, brother.
Our mentor, Nonsense Password. Yeah. Good to have you.
I think
me and El Carpe are getting this down a little bit, starting to flare.
Barely. A little bit. Eric, what'd you do today?
Bill, I didn't do much. I had some things I had to take care of. I stopped at my mom's, but my mom's got no AC. Well, she's got AC, but it's only through a window, and she puts it in her bedroom so she can sleep comfortably at night. But I've been trying to talk my mom into getting the central air, but the problem is that she's never really had it, so she doesn't really care if she has it or not. She's got a boiler, you know, baseboard heat. So if she were to get air conditioning, she's got to put it in the attic or do something kind of funky, and it's expensive.
Right.
And if we switch the system over from boiler to forced air, then we got to do all the cosmetic stuff with the baseboard.
Yeah.
It's just open up a can of worms. So 81 years old, she's going to have to deal with with a window unit probably the rest of her life. But
no, Eric, there is a better suggestion. She's in a ranch, right?
Yeah, she's in a ranch.
Get her a whole house fan. It sucks the air out of the house and blows it into the attic.
Have one. We covered it up, and it does work. It draws the cool air from the basement through the house. Yeah. But when we were renovating the house, you wanted the hallways.
So you covered it up.
Crown molded, yeah, so we covered it up. But we also did that with the thought that she was going to change over. But I told her if we're going to run it, this is years ago, well, I should say probably 3 years ago, that if she was going to renovate the house, she should have done the forced air back then and then did all the cosmetic stuff. Now she's going to do it. She would have to do it backwards. It doesn't make any sense.
Cost-wise. No, it has to be twice as expensive. Yeah,
exactly.
But you should be able to cut the hole and reopen just for most of that whole house fan to work. Or cut a hole and get a slightly smaller whole house fan.
Yeah, you know what we were told too is that we can actually put a dummy system in, forced air dummy system, and just run AC and then leave the baseboards, but poke all the vents up where they need to be and just run AC through kind of a dummy system. And then in the future, if she ever wants to switch over for whatever reason, it's almost like putting a furnace in without putting the furnace in. You put all the ductwork in, you put all that stuff in, but you put the blowers on, I think, to force the cold air from the AC through the house, and you kind of get it, right? Everything but the heater, you know. So,
but I think she'd be so much better off if you just actually cut the hole and let the whole house fan work.
Yeah,
can switch that on for 20 minutes and it sucks all the cold air up and blows out all the hot, and then, you know, I don't know.
You guys, do you guys have one? Does your mom have one?
No, my buddy down the street has one, and we open, you know, like at 10 o'clock at night when it's just about 68 degrees outside or something.
Yeah, yeah.
We open up the windows just a little bit on the first floor, and he cranks on the fan, and it just, and you can feel the air getting sucked into the house, and it's the cold air from outside cooling off the inside of the house, and then the house is cool until early afternoon the next day.
That's the way I grew up. Yeah, my parents used to run that thing, and I'd push my bed up against the window so I wouldn't sweat in bed when it was nights like this.
Right.
Man.
So, you know, she's going to do what she wants to do. She's 81 years old. What are you going to tell her?
Yeah, no, exactly. Right? Exactly.
You know, you can make suggestions and say, I think, but she's going to do what she wants to do.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be like this. They're saying possibly all the way through July.
Yeah, it's going to be at least the next week or two is going to be hotter than hell.
Yeah, yeah.
If hell ever existed.
Exactly, exactly. Conversation.
I always want to bring that topic up, but yeah, I know.
Hey, I work with somebody that we get in this argument all the time about heaven and hell, and you know, it's an interesting topic, but I choose to kind
another
of
day.
Another day. Another day, a lot more drinks.
Yeah.
You sipping on anything over there, or is it a quiet night?
I'm having a little bit of Patty, a little of my Irish.
Okay.
It's a little softer and smoother than the Proper 12. The Proper 12 has a bit of a bite to it, and it seems like it's stronger. And the Patty is perfect. It's got that sort of oaky standard whiskey taste, but it also has this little heathery, almost not fruity, but like a flowery something in the background, and it softens it up. It makes it perfect for Irish coffee. Don't ever put Jameson in your Irish coffee. You ruin it.
You put patties in
your Irish coffee.
I hate to say it, but I'm not a fan of Jameson's. I've tried it. I thought I liked it. I thought I'm supposed to like it, but I'm just not a fan of it. It's good. Like, you ever have Jim Beam before?
Yeah.
Jim Beam's got that odd taste to it. I don't know what it is, but.
Yeah. Everybody brags about how awesome it's supposed to be. I can't drink it.
I can't either. I'm drinking clear beer tonight. You know what clear beer is?
Clear beer. Never heard of it.
I used to hang out at this place before it closed in downtown Plymouth, and it was a bunch of older fellas that used to go in there and used to basically fill up the bar, and probably the high majority of them drank vodka on the rocks, and they called it clear beer. Okay. So,
What you're having.
Clear beer with a little bit of this this bai kind of.
Oh, you were talking about that last time.
Yeah, it's kind of a fruity tea, whatever. It's no carbs, so I'm trying to. I'm trying to be healthy tonight.
Well, right. If you're going to drink something, drink it healthy.
Exactly.
How's the overall congestion problem?
You know, it's clearing up. It's I think I'm on the backside of it. It's not like it was before, but the problems I have is when I wake up in the morning and I'm taking allergy pills. I'm taking the spray in the nose. I'm doing everything. I still wake up and I still have a lot of that drainage in the morning. I know it sounds disgusting, but it's something. Dude, I don't know. I'm not the guy. I don't know.
You had 6 months of this.
Yeah, shit tried to kill me. Somebody tried to kill me.
So you had 6 months of this in your system. It's going to take a little bit to clear it out.
Yeah. Thank God.
So the antibiotics worked.
I think so. I went and saw Mr. Matt that we used to work for, and I ran up a flight of stairs. And you know, like when you're not feeling well, you know, and your lungs are kind of compromised, you run up a flight of stairs, you're kind of like, whew.
Completely winded. Kind
of, I'm like.
Well, no, you're also not in the best shape.
Yeah, I'm a poster child of good shape.
Doing stairs all the time.
It was, just saying. No. Hey, I appreciate your honesty.
I love you dearly. I wouldn't lie to you.
But, I ran up the flight of stairs, and Mr. Stan, you remember Mr. Stan? He's like, you don't look so good. And I'm like, I don't really feel so hot. Those flight of stairs almost killed me.
Jeez.
Oh, but anyways, podcast number 13, we're going to talk about what makes a rich man in this world today. I'm sure there's a lot of definitions of a rich man. And go ahead.
Well, how are you defining rich?
Well, that's the whole thing. That's my whole thing.
So we can go into all the different aspects of what rich could actually be considered. What is wealth?
Yeah, and where I'm coming from is that I think we've all kind of thought about this, and my life has changed quite a bit over the years. I went from corporate to not corporate, and I think you've been pretty much corporate most of your life, right? Working for the man.
Working for the man.
Yeah. I think you're a little bit different, though, because you're kind of completely on your own, and you don't need to really take direction. You just have a job to do, and as long as you're underwriting your loans,
I got a job to do. I got a certain set of rules to follow to do that job, but nobody's pushing me and saying, do this, do that. You know, they say, you know, hey, we got to have X done by such and such. And I just go and get X done by such and such. And they leave me alone because I do what I'm supposed to do, you know?
Yeah. The business I came from, which was construction management, which I did for about 13 years out of college, it was kind of it was never ending. You never really knew what your week or month or year was going to be like. And it all depended on how busy you were as a company. And I could have one job to bid on Monday. And I could have five jobs to bid by the end of Monday. The same day, but you know, and it wasn't, I talked to similar people about this too. And fuck balls. She's in social work. And, you know, a lot of people out here, she talks about people complaining about the hours they got to put in. And I tell her, I'm like, I was in a position where it's not, when you get into construction management, you don't really complain about what you have to do. You just get it done because you can't not get it done. There's time, you know, there's time schedules for everything. If I get a set of plans that need to be bid in 2 weeks, I can't say I don't have time to do it. If I have to work at night, if I have to pull all-nighters, I have to do whatever. It's what I got to do, you know?
Right. And, the job has to get done. The job has to get done a certain way. And the job requires X amount of time to get done by a certain amount of time. And in order to squeeze you know, 8 weeks of work into 2.5 weeks, you got to work your little hind end off. Otherwise, you don't get paid.
Exactly. I don't have a job. And then, you know, the thing is about construction management, like other places, if you don't, if you have a reputation of not getting things done, that word gets out through the industry and nobody's going to hire you.
Oh, yeah.
They only want.
Right.
You know, that's the same thing I'm sure with your industry too.
Right. And that was that's the reason why I got to stay employed during all the downtimes over the last 20 years was because I got a reputation of, he's going to show up for work every day. He's going to get the stuff done that needs to get done, and he makes good decisions. He asks the right questions. We figure out the right stuff, and the loans that he does are good loans.
Yeah, and you're still getting recorded by some of the guys you used to work with.
Yeah, I still got people calling me, and I'm so honored, and I really appreciate it. But I'm so in such the place that I need to be.
Right.
You know, you and I have had this conversation 1,000 times. I don't know if anybody else has heard it, but you know, I'm like 3 miles away from the office. Something happens with the kids at school, or I got to get up and go do something, or you know, like next week I gotta run off and take care of Ma. So I'm gonna leave early every day next week, and then I'm taking a half a day next week, one of the days. And it's like, you do what you got to do to take care of your stuff, because we know when we have you here, you're gonna get the other stuff done that you need to get done.
And sure.
I got nobody babysitting me.
Yeah, you put your time in with the travel you did and having to provide for your family.
There were some times there that, you know, I could have been complaining and crying and whining. And, you know, there were some pretty lean times where, you know, hey, mac and cheese was a gourmet meal.
Yeah, gourmet.
It was, you know,
you had bacon
brand mac and cheese.
Right. What's your favorite mac and cheese? Is it like a homemade mac and cheese, Velveeta, Kraft in a box?
I like the Kraft in a box.
Do you really?
You know, I do. I love the cheese powder. But see, the thing is you got to make – this is – again, it comes back to me being a cook when I was younger. And what you got to do is you got to make it saucy. So it says a quarter cup of milk and a half a stick of butter. Well, I always put in a little more butter and like a half a cup of milk, like twice as much milk. And then I stir it all in there and make sure it's good and runny. And then you can't let it sit and, you know, dry out and get all crusty. Because once it gets dry, then it gets clumpy. When it's good and runny, and then you take the garlic salt and you sprinkle some garlic salt in there. And you take some chives and you chop up the chives. You throw that in there and you stir it all up. And if you're really feeling special, you take a red pepper and you dice it up real small little pieces and you throw that in there.
So you know what I do? I do my noodles. So I don't do it out of the box, but I do my own. So I boil my noodles, get those ready to go. Mm-hmm. And then I take like a Munster cheese, an American cheese, and then whatever other cheese I've got. Sometimes I'll put a little bit of a mozzarella in there, throw some kind of like off the wall kind of you know, whatever I've got to kind of just mix it up a little
Brie,
bit.
Because you're rich.
Munster, it's nice and gooey. And American, it has the color, and it makes it nice and smooth and whatnot. I might even throw a chunk of Velveeta in there. And I melt that down. And then when you said the red pepper, what I do is I dice up red pepper real small. Uh-huh. And I also put in bacon in there or bacon or ham. Put it all together, and then I just bake it, kind of just bake it enough to kind of crust the top a little bit and heat it up all together. I've taken that to a couple of Super Bowl parties, and they say that now I'm not allowed in unless I bring that.
Okay.
So and I make
that. That actually does sound delicious.
Yeah, and it does. It comes out the red peppers make it sweet a little bit, and you get the saltiness from the ham and bacon.
Now,
I'm pretty proud of myself with that one.
Before I got married, when I was a single guy living in a cheesy little house in Ferndale all those years ago, I worked in a warehouse. And we used to, you know, the kits that, or you know, the people that give away samples at like Costco and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
The warehouse I worked at used to package those kits to send for those people to you know, have the supplies to do what they do to distribute the little samples.
Right? Oh, I got you.
And sometimes we get, you know, pallets of product, you know, let's say some kind of salsa, you know.
Yep.
And so we would get pallets of three different, there's hot, mild, and hot, medium, and mild. And we'd send all those out, and it would be a three-week promotion. And so we'd send out as many of those kits as we're supposed to. And we always ended up with like a pallet or a half a pallet left over. And I swear, I was so poor. I was making, I think that was when minimum wage was like $9 an hour. No, minimum wage would have been probably $5.50 an hour or something. It was a long time. I was barely making anything. And so, but the thing was, is we were doing, I would take a case of salsa home, and I'd put a half a jar of mild salsa in the mac and cheese just as after I mixed everything up and I'm warming it up again. And that made for yummy, you know. And again, that to me at the time, when you're 21 years old and you got nothing, you know,
sure,
renting and you got nothing.
Yeah, you're eating large back then.
That was huge.
Yeah, and I had crazy
six to 12 cases of salsa in my house at that time. It was ridiculous. So I had a lot of runny. Sorry, go on.
Well,
what else? Where were we before we interrupted ourselves? With
all that being said, let's lead back into what makes us a rich man, and rich can, or man can go for a woman or a man, just a, you know,
a rich person.
Exactly. Rich person, be politically correct, I guess.
Rich tits. Rich tits.
I'll do the cliff note, or I'll kind of clarify a little bit.
Yeah,
so is it the guy that works corporate that makes $200,000 a year, this company car, and the 4,000 square foot house that goes on vacation 4 years that's gone 60% of the time? Or is it the guy that makes an honest living that's able to stay home and maybe drive a used car and be with his family every day and watch them grow up? You know,
so
what
here,
makes you rich?
I'm already going to take issue with something. You know, I'm only doing this to be pedantic.
Yeah.
But you said the corporate guy with all his stuff. And then when you said the other guy, you said makes an honest living, which implies that the corporate guy is and that's, mind you, I am not that corporate guy.
Right.
I do not make that kind of money. I don't have the corporate car. I don't got nothing. What I have is I'm starting off with me and why I think I'm fabulously wealthy. And I was fabulously wealthy the day I married my wife, and we didn't have two nickels to rub together.
I was fabulously
wealthy because I had the love of a good woman, and we had the future ahead of us. And we had dreams and goals, and we knew we were going to attain 1/8 of them.
Yep.
But we were going to try together, and we're going to work together. And now we have more than two nickels to rub together.
Right.
I have, you know, I've got a livable salary. On occasion, I'm encouraged and I get the opportunity to make a healthy bonus here and there, which helps pay for things like school for the kids or insurance for a car or, you know, all this stuff. Yeah, I would have to say monetarily, I'm barely keeping my head above water and I'm fine with that. But I would have to say, spiritually and emotionally, well, maybe not emotionally, I'm a wreck, but family-wise, I'm fabulously wealthy. You know, I'll always brag about these kids I got. I'll brag about my wife till the day I die, because Lord knows I'm going first, and I'm going with no liver.
No, guys like you are going to live to be like 120.
I probably will.
Maybe 120, maybe 99. Yeah.
But the thing is it's – Even when I was making, you know, I had worked at a place and then I was making good money there and we were looking like we were on our way up the little corporate ladder and all that stuff. And then that job died and for nothing I did, but it's just the company went away. And then I had to go back and work on that boat.
Right.
And I went back to a salary, a low salary, a zillion hours. But I was happy because we still got to live indoors, wear clothes, and eat food.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then, you know my story. And I went through the whole time where I had to travel. And when I traveled, I made great money, but I was that guy that made great money, was never home.
Right, right, right.
But the thing was, because I had this great woman, I was home. She made clear to the kids that the reason daddy's gone and can't hug you to, and talk you to sleep tonight is because he has to be at work, and the work that he does takes him away. And that work that he does lets us live indoors, wear clothes, and eat food.
Yeah. Were you able to get home?
It also gave my wife the opportunity to not have to have a job. She got to do stuff at the school every day with the kids. She got to be in the PTA and do all that stuff. So I look at financial wealth as a status thing, more or less.
Right.
But maybe the family wealth is how it, because I don't give a shit what other people think about my family. I know I love my family and my family loves me, and everybody else can go jump in a river if they don't think I'm doing it right.
Right.
Take a flying leap. You're not here every day.
Yeah.
I wasn't here every day for a long time, but in spirit I was, because my wife made me here every day.
Sure.
And that's what teamwork is. And I'll always brag about that, because, and when I say brag about it, I mean talk her up, because I've done some stupid things in my life, but the smartest thing I ever did was pick that woman for a wife.
Yeah, yeah. How'd
smartest
you guys meet?
Thing I ever did.
You guys meet in college or?
After college, met in a bar. Royal Oak.
Oh, shit. A local bar or a college bar?
No, in Royal Oak.
In Royal Oak? Okay.
Yeah, it's closed now. Doesn't exist anymore, but she didn't want to go out that night, and one of her friends convinced her to go out.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to go out that night, and one of my friends convinced me to go out. Turns out, unbeknownst to either of our two friends knew each other.
Oh, no shit.
So they started talking, and then we started talking. And, me, I'm a jabberbox. And I was having a good time. I thought, hey, I must be saying something, right? She's actually listening. She hasn't thrown a drink in my face yet. Maybe I'm all right.
Right.
And I went off to go get another drink, and she told me, she's like, yeah, I didn't think you were coming back. And I came back. So it just happened that way. But, it doesn't matter where you meet or how you meet or whatever. Everyone's story is beautiful because it's theirs.
So let me ask you this. Yeah. What keeps you guys together? There's so much divorce in this world, almost one out of two. What keeps you guys together?
I don't know.
It's got to be like some kind of understanding, you guys
respect. It's intangible.
From you guys. Yeah.
There's some feeling.
There's
some intangible out there that is just, I couldn't imagine my life without her.
Right, right.
And as much as she tries to, she can't imagine her life without me.
Hey, Bill, why don't you go back on the road for a little while?
Exactly. She's like, do you have to be here? Really?
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Do you think absence makes the heart grow stronger?
No, I think abstinence makes the heart grow stronger.
Hmm.
Think about that for a minute.
Yeah.
That's a bad joke. You're supposed to laugh at that.
Oh, I did.
Yeah. Abstinence, as in not having sex makes the heart.
No, I got it.
Okay. Yeah. It was horrible.
Yeah.
The syllables match up, so therefore it makes sense.
Yeah. If you said it really fast, probably be the same thing, but I'm not sure.
Right. I think there's something to be said for not so much absence making the heart go stronger, but adversity. But going through adversity together, and it, from the very beginning of our relationship, we were on the same team. I don't know if we ever sat down and said it, or if it just happened this way. It was, whatever happens, we're going to work through it together. We got to figure it out together. Yep. You know, there's certain things that she does without asking me, and there's a bunch of stuff I do without asking her. But we both know that at the end of the day, anything we do is supposed to push us towards the next goal.
Sure.
Whatever that ever turns out to be. But the next goal sometimes is to make sure we live indoors, wear clothes, and eat food.
Yeah, we all go through our milestones in life, I think, you know? Yeah. We try to achieve what we have to achieve, you know?
What about you?
It's tough. You know, it's a little tough.
What do you consider wealth?
Well, you know, I've been through, you know, I don't know. I haven't been through that much. I think I've kind of protected myself over the years. I grew up the son of a plumber, and I've seen good times and bad times. And I think as a person, you know, I was always college driven. My dad and mom always pushed me towards college. That was never an issue. It was never even a thought of not going to college. I
had that problem too.
I was a worker, so I worked and went to college, commuted. I did whatever it took. I worked in West Bloomfield, and I went to school in Ypsilanti. So I lived in Plymouth. So I had a ton of commuting to do.
A lot of driving, yeah.
Yeah, I went to school Tuesdays and Thursdays all day, and then I worked Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. And that was my life for pretty much 4 years until I got out of school. And I was pretty much, you know, it was a maybe a Thursday night, go out to the bar, Friday night, go to the bar, or whatever, maybe Saturday. And that was it. Other than that, it was just work and homework, you know. But I listen to some people, some families today, and they're struggling to get their kids to school. And, you know, I look at the way that I was raised, and it was never a question. The only question was, what college were you going to go to and why?
Right.
You know, follow your dreams, right?
And, right. What are you going to do?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, you know my story over the years. I got out of construction, not by choice, but by only because of the economy changed and went to work
2008,
for
2008, baby.
Yeah, went to work for Big Matt and did mortgages for a while and fell in some hard times during the housing crisis and somehow fell into real estate. But I'm not, you know, I'm kind of like you. I'm not maybe in the upper tier as far as income, but I don't have any stresses anymore. There's nobody that can fire me. And that's what I love, you know.
And you're in a different position, and that's something to be said. Is no one can fire you. Yeah,
yeah.
My job, I could get fired from my job. It's highly unlikely.
But you won't.
And I would have to do something stupid to earn it. But you're in a position where you're in charge, and there's something to that. I can't do that. I need to have a salary, something that I know I'm comfortable and whatever. I can't. But well, it's you. Well, you just got to take care of you. You don't. You and your mom.
Yeah.
Right.
You have a family.
You don't have the
just
right.
Me.
You don't have the wife and kids to deal with. You got to take care of and take care of mom. And then, you know, so if you have a lean month, it only hurts you, and then it puts you in a position of, all right, well, I could struggle more next month and make it better.
Yeah.
And I've seen you do that.
Yeah. People laugh at me. They're like, where's your paper towel? I'm like, there's no paper towel in this place. Use that rag, you know?
Yeah.
People laugh at me like, dude, you're saving a buck. And I'm like, you know what? Yeah, I saved probably 10 bucks over the course of a year. And I mean, who needs you? You don't need you don't need a paper towel. Just use a rag. Yeah, wipe your hands off. Clean rag, you know?
Right.
Clean
towel. But for you, it's not just that. There's like 15 to 20 different things that – consumer products that you don't necessarily need. Got soap and you got stuff for your hair and all the basics to clean the house and all that stuff. But, you know, there's a ton of frivolous extra crap that people have in their homes. And it's like, why do you need – who needs the fancy soap that nobody uses?
Well,
why are you spending $30 on fancy soap that no one's allowed to touch?
It's a good point. And it brings me to this is that – you probably see it maybe a little bit more than I do, is since we're going through this COVID thing, how many people are in foreclosure now? Do you know, in the state of Michigan or nationally? Is it 1 point some million, 1.4, 1.5? I forgot the number. Well, I don't know if I got it. 3 million, 1.5?
I don't know where you're seeing that, because a lot of what's going on is a lot of lenders are putting people into forbearance.
Right, but still, isn't it still a form of foreclosure, though, if you're 30 days behind a payment?
No, you're late.
No.
But what forbearance does, and this is actually to side note, first off, talk to a mortgage professional that knows your personal situation before you take this as actual advice. But if you're in a position where you think you're going to be late on your mortgage and it's going to become a problem, you need to talk to the lender and say, hey, look, this COVID thing's killing me. And you may need to sit on hold for 45 minutes to 2 hours. But once you get through, you talk to somebody and you say, look, I'm having a problem. This is killing me. I need to go into this forbearance program and walk me through what I need to do. And basically what essentially it does is it takes the payments that you're not making now and puts them at the end of the loan.
Right.
So if you had a 30-year mortgage and you're 15 years into it, you had 180 payments left, exactly 15 years into it, 180 payments left, but you missed two of them through this forbearance program, or three of them, you actually have 183 payments left.
Right, right, right.
They take that payment, throw it at the end. It hurts you because you're going to end up paying more interest over the long term, but sure, it doesn't hurt you because you get to live indoors in the same house. You don't have to dick around with getting kicked out of your own house, going through the foreclosure process, which is a nightmare for anybody all around the world.
Right.
The lenders even hate doing foreclosures because it's no fun for them to lose money. The people going, it's just a nightmare. But that forbearance program isn't foreclosure. Foreclosure is, give me the keys, get the fuck out.
Right, right. Well, why? I wonder why they didn't do this.
The forbearance has actually been encouraged by each of the states, and a lot of the lenders have automatically put people into forbearance, even without people knowing it.
Right.
And if you do make your pay, here's this happened to me with mine until I called them and told them I'm not in forbearance because I'm working.
Sure.
But they put me in forbearance, which is what's reporting on the credit, but I kept making the payments on the house because I was able to.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make any difference. It's only how it was reported. So if I went to get a new credit card or, you know, refinance the house or something, that forbearance shows up on my credit report, that's bad. It hurts your credit score, but you get to live indoors, wear clothes, and eat food.
Sure.
And sometimes that short pain of, all right, well, you know, I'm not going to get that new credit card this month, and I'm not going to be able to buy the car that I want to buy. I'm
right.
going to have to suffer with this thing and get a new battery instead of getting a new car. Then,
right.
you know, let me suffer through that for now. And then 3 to 6 months down the road, when everything's smooth again and I'm back to work and everything's cool, then I can get the car and maybe I'll get even a better one.
Yep.
You know.
My question is this. So why back in 2008 and 2000, you know, the whole real estate crisis, I wonder why they didn't do this back then. Or did they, but it just wasn't on the scale that they're doing it today?
You know what I'm saying?
It would have made sense.
What I'm concerned with is people, renters who are going to get evicted.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Right now. That's my concern. But, yeah, back in 2008, this type of program would have made a lot of sense to say, all right, everybody goes on automatic forbearance. If you can make the payments, you make the payments. And after 3 months and you're fine, we assume you're going to be okay unless you call us. We're taking you off forbearance.
Yep.
It doesn't hurt you really because you've made the payments and they take you off the forbearance. You're fine. That would have made sense. And the people who needed it could have gotten it and maybe wouldn't have lost that house back in 2008, 2009. And that would have been fine. But there was also a series of underlying problems with the mortgage industry at that time and how they were packaging and reselling these mortgages, selling bad paper with good. It was just, there was some really stupid shit going on.
Yeah, it was a mess.
And I don't even want to get into all the details on that. And sadly, I know a lot of this stuff, and it's scary. Because it was right after the crash 2008 that I started traveling, doing back-end purchases. So I saw the paper. I saw it.
Yeah.
I saw what they were doing. I'm like, this ain't right, but this is what you want. This is what you're paying me to do. I'm transferring the funds. But yeah, I think because this is so global and so earth shaking that the finance companies just decided, you know, if we actually foreclosed on everybody, no one would be living indoors. It would be crazy shit on the streets. And we would, the houses that we thought we could have would be burnt to the ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's actually in their best interest to say, you know what? We got people living, and this is something, and this goes right to this, exactly what I was about to say about them thinking. When I had, in my first house, I had some problems making payments. And I learned early on in life, if you have problems, you talk to the people who can solve those problems.
Right.
And so the mortgage company I was with, who I won't say, a very large bank, I called them up and I says, hey, look, I'm in a bit of a bind. Job-wise, I'm in between things. I have something coming. I'm not going to be able to make this next payment. Can I make an interest-only payment, or can I give you something just as a good faith to go forward? Or is there a program you guys have? Because I'm not going to be able to make this next payment, and I don't want to lose the house. And here's the key. I know you don't want me to lose the house.
Right.
You guys don't want the house. I want the house. I want to live here. You want me to live here. You want the money for me to live here.
Yeah.
So let's figure out a way that maybe we can work through these next 2 or 3 months that are going to be difficult. And I will work back to getting all the money that you need for me to continue living here. But if you take the house from me, you guys lose big time.
And
you don't want that. I don't want that. I want to live in the house. I want to do everything I can to continue living in this house. And I said that to her in 16 different ways. And the gal's like, you know, I can't make that decision, but I'm so going to talk to my manager right now. And within minutes, I was talking to the manager, who said, all right, you're one of the few people who actually goes through this and actually understands what's going on.
Yeah.
We will figure something out. And we did. And we set up, you know, it was, I missed like 3 payments. And it was, I was able to get it, it. They said, look, you need to give us something every month. It was the weirdest thing. It's like nothing I'd ever seen before, but they made this special thing because I called and talked to them and said, look, I understand.
Yeah.
You want the money. I want the house. You don't want me to not live in this house because you're going to sell it for a loss.
Right.
You know, it's easier for you if we can figure out something for the next 3 to 6 months that we can work through together, and I get the money to you. And I did, and it worked. And, you know, that's when I decided to go back and work on the boat.
Yeah.
Or no, actually, that's not. That was the impetus that got me to travel. Because I had heard so much about, you know, traveling underwriters making tons of coin. And I was just like, I can't do that. I can't leave my kids. And because we're almost going to lose the house, I made some phone calls, and within 2 weeks I was traveling. And
you could probably live off the per diem.
What's that?
I said you could probably live off the per diem that you were given and just send your checks home, man.
I did, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
They paid me a healthy enough per diem that I was able to eat and drink as much as I wanted. And sent the regular wage home, and we got everything covered rather quickly. But it's you know, and this is another thing about wealthy. Wealthy is being able to see an opportunity when it throws itself in your face.
Yeah.
The opportunity for me was people telling me, you should travel, you should travel. You can make more money if you would travel. And I'm like, I'm not doing it. But because I had that adversity that holy shit, I'm going to lose my house.
Yeah.
Then I started to think outside the box and go, you know what? Maybe I should do this travel thing because that's going to solve this immediate crazy ass problem.
That's what happened to me. I moved to Baltimore. Yeah, it was just kind of it puts you in a mindset like, okay, I'm still trying to pay my own bills, but when your back's up against the wall and you got to do something, moving out of state to a place you don't know to make a living and to feel like you have a life, for lack of a better way of saying it, moving away is not that big of a deal. You know, you pack your bags and, you know, I told myself when I was driving to Baltimore, when I moved to Baltimore, I said, you know, shit, I don't even see my good friends but once every 3-4 months anyways. I said, I can fly home in 3 months to see my friends. You know, I knew I wasn't going to be gone forever, but, you know, it's what you got to do. You know, you got to do what you got to do to survive.
Right.
So was there anything, I mean, with what you've been through, is there anything that you would give up for, you know, say if they came to you and said, well, we'll pay you $200,000 a year. Is there anything that you would give up to make that kind of money with what you've been through? Does that make sense?
That's a great question. You got to hang on 1 minute though. Talk for about a minute and a half here. I got to do something real quick.
All right. But anyways, so here Bill and I are talking about kind of recap. What does it feel like to be a rich man today? In other words, is it about what you have? Is it the size of your house, cars you drive? Is it the friends that you hang with? Or is it more of a rich and family, meaning, you know, you go home to a loving wife and understanding kids and you make do with what you've got and there's an understanding with that. And, you know, you build on that. It's funny how it seems to be that people are very split, I think, between Bill and I used to write mortgage loans and Bill's an underwriter. Over the years, you can see how people live. They've got the $400,000 houses with the Escalades in the driveway, but their depth of financials are only 3-4 months deep, and after that, they're broke. You know,
right. Yeah.
A lot of people live kind of just beyond month to month, but they feel like they've got to have the biggest and the best of everything to maybe keep up and prove to everybody how successful they are, and it's kind of crazy.
That is scary. Okay, so what was the question? You had asked me a really good question before I so rudely interrupted you and said that I had to pour a drink.
Well, I got to go pour myself a drink too here. So,
ask me the question and I'll ramble on.
I'll dart over and pour real quick. But so if somebody were to offer you, knowing what you've been through traveling and over the years, if somebody were to offer you $200,000 a year, would you take that? And if you did take it, what would you be willing to give up for that? Would you give up anything that you've got, the ability to see your kids and see their recitals or being with your wife every day or going home every day to a home-cooked meal? Is there anything that you would give up for maybe you see the point that I'm trying to make? I'm making
sense. I see where you're headed, but here's the challenge I have with that premise. Because what's that?
I said, will money trump anything? In other words, you know, if you paid me $200,000, I'd maybe relocate for 2 years and live. You know, I don't know.
Well, here's.
Let me put you this way. I have a friend that is down in Tennessee that has an excellent job as far as a manager for a company that they make the parts that go to heart valves. And he makes good money, got a great house. He's got some fancy cars. But he's on the road 5 days a week, and he only sees his wife on the weekends. And he's got six kids between his new wife and himself. Now, granted, some of his kids are in college, but he gives up that for his lifestyle. He's gone 5 days, doesn't see his kids, doesn't see his wife for the extra cars and the big house. Would you do that? I'm going to go make myself a cocktail.
Well, I think there's a way to think about it. And it's more, not so much would I do it, but for how long would I do it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that the question is this something that's going to be my lifestyle forever? Or is this something where I can say, I'm going to do this for a year, or I'm going to do this for 2 years? You know, I did the travel thing for almost 6 years, and it was a nightmare, but it worked out, and I made arrangements to be the guy who, instead of coming home for 2 days a month, or I'm sorry, 2 days every other week, I became the guy that would come home for a week and a half once a month. And I told him, I said, you're going to save money on flights, so you're going to send me home for a week and a half. And it's basically, well, it worked out. So
yeah, I guess my question is, would you want to live that life? Would you want to be gone for a week at a time?
The question is, would I want to live like that forever? The question is, would I want to live like that for how long?
Oh, he's done it for 20 years. 20 years he's done that. He's been on the road for 20 years.
Well, and then the other question is, how does his wife feel about it?
He's divorced and remarried. He remarried his secretary.
But how does his new wife feel about it?
No, I don't know. I don't know.
But, and see, that's the thing is, you can't, to answer your question, you can't just ask the one person who's involved, because there's always more than one person involved. And
exactly.
Like I said, when I had to go travel, my wife and I sat down and I said, this is going to suck. I'm not going to see you as much. And but you're not going to have to go to work every day. You're going to be able to take care of the kids and raise them and do the things that you want to do. But I'm just not going to be here.
Right.
And I tried to arm wrestle her as she was pushing me out the door, because, you know, get the hell out of the door, go do the work.
Right.
Just kidding. But no, the way it worked was, we talked it through and that's what we accepted. It was like, this is how it works. And really, wealth, like I said, if you're a single person, wealth is whatever you just define it as. Being rich is what you say it is. But once you put more than one person involved, a wife, a couple kids, a mom or a dad you have to take care of because of whatever reason, once you start adding other people to it, well, then that wealth, that whole thing is a completely different story. And by the way, I don't know if you can hear the fireworks in the background, but the fireworks in the background is fireworks, not gunshots.
Are you asking me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're 45 miles apart. I don't know if they travel that far.
No, but I mean, can you hear the fireworks through the thing?
Oh, on your side? No, I can't. No. Nope, I can't hear anything. Let me ask you this. Did I lose you?
Bueller. Yeah, you're there.
Videos. Do you want to touch on this? Or you just want to wrap up being a rich man? Videos. How have they changed our perception of what actually happens?
Are we done talking about wealth?
Well, I don't know. We could be. It could be. I was waiting for somebody else to jump on, but I don't think we have any supporters tonight. Maybe we should continue to make our podcast at the same time, or maybe adjust them to 8 o'clock or something, or 9. I don't know.
Well, what do you think? No, and I think a lot of it has to do with, this is a holiday weekend. People are out drinking and silly, and nobody wants to listen to you and I babble, especially when they're out drinking, being silly, and having fun.
Exactly.
You know, and as much as I told you from the very beginning, I don't care if we get 7 listeners. I enjoy our chats. You know,
I certainly do.
I enjoy talking to you. And if other people want to listen to us and eventually we make, you know, 4 coins out of it, fine.
Right.
We're having a good time. It's all about you and me.
Do you want to talk about videos a little bit?
No, I want to finish this whole, what do you think wealth is?
All right.
Because, you know, you're a single guy. I want to hear your side.
Well, it's kind of funny. I mean, I think in a certain way, I'm a little bit more similar to you. I don't need the fancy cars. I don't need the fancy houses. But if I could have a car. Yeah, but that's just it's a middle of the road Honda Accord Sport. It looks real fancy, but it's not that expensive. It's probably cheaper than most cars out there for the way it looks and handles and drives and all that. People come to me and go, "Wow, that's a nice car." You know, they think it's a Lexus or something. And I'm like, really, a couple steps above the base, man. They put bigger wheels and tires on it. But it's a nice car.
Let me ask you this about that car. Is it the car you wanted?
Pardon me?
Is it the car you wanted?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I picked that car out specifically. Yeah,
if you could buy any car in the world, what car would you buy?
Well, it's a tough question. I'm a car fanatic, so.
Yeah, I have that same problem.
I love the sports sedans. I love the fast cars. I love the great handling cars and all that. If I could buy something, it might be like a Porsche, you know. I could afford it and if it made sense. With my income, it's not. But in my case, it's really, you know, I'm at a point now where I have two focuses, is that to keep my life with no debt. I do have a car payment. I do have, you know, the financial responsibilities of a condo and all that. But my whole thing is what makes me sleep at night and have no stress and wake up every day and not have to worry about anything is I live a life with no debt and I live a very frugal life. And some people laugh at me about it.
You really didn't answer the question.
Yeah, I know.
If you could buy any car.
What was the question?
If you could pay cash for any car, and it didn't matter. You had the cash to buy any car in the world. What car would you buy? And you didn't have payments. You don't have to worry about it. It's the car that you want. You can just walk in there and buy it.
I'm not sure where Porsche is. Porsche went from a 911 to a 996, and it's all the same body style, but call it a Porsche 996, which is just a basic Porsche, maybe a turbo, and that's it. It's a two-seater. That'd be the car. It's not a Lamborghini, not a Ferrari, not a high-end Lexus, nothing like that. That would probably be my dream car if I ever had one, if I ever could buy one. That's about as high as it's a car you can park and drive anywhere. You don't have to worry about, you know, you can't go drive a Lamborghini. I could drive a, put it this way.
Right.
I could drive a Porsche in the winter, but you wouldn't want to drive a Lamborghini in the winter, right?
No.
So it's,
no, you wouldn't.
So that's always been my favorite car. I don't know if that answers your question or not, but
I have two cars.
Right.
One is a 1970 Cadillac Coupe DeVille convertible.
You have one of those?
No, that's what I would buy.
Okay. Gotcha. You have two cars. In other words, I gotcha.
That's for sure. I would buy that in a heartbeat.
Yep.
I think the other one.
I love old Cadillac.
Because I love old, big, long, gas guzzling cars. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I know it's not politically correct. The other, probably like a 72 Chevelle SS.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I love those cars, too. I love the old Pontiacs.
And I would definitely go with – and that would just be my cruising around car. To drive to and from work, I'm totally happy with my piece of shit van. I got a 2006 piece of shit van. That thing has served me so well.
It does. You know. It does.
But, yep. You know, the other thing about having a van or a truck or something is, you know, especially with having kids, if I got to move somebody somewhere, I got room. I can move some stuff. You know, and again, my priority has never been – I love cars. but my priorities have not been buy a great car. My
priorities
have been take care of the family, take care of the stuff, make a nice home for everybody to be in, make that the way, and that is where my wealth is. My wealth is in my home life with the family, but, you know, the car thing is just kind of a pipe dream.
Yeah.
Sure, it'd be nice to have and be able to just, you know, be Jay Leno and have a garage full of cars. That would be great. But I know I'm never going to do that. You know, maybe when I retire and I have some money and something, even before I would buy a car, I would want to buy a cottage or something on a lake so that the kids and the grandkids could come up.
My cousin just bought one off Lake Huron, right between Taos and Alpena in Harrisville. And he bought a piece of property, $125,000, right on the water with a mobile home. And he goes, it's all I need. He goes, I can come out here and hang out and sit on the beach all day and cook and have a couple cocktails. And I'm like, good for you.
A mobile home to drop yourself in and, you know, make the outside of it look nice. And all you do is sleep in there anyway. What's the big deal?
Yeah, exactly. You
sleep and watch some TV. And it really comes down to wealth is based not on what everybody else says. Wealth is based on what you feel is best for you.
Sure.
If you're selfish and you think you need to have all these things, well, then wealth for you is that. But if, you know, if you want to take care of other people around you and do things, and then your wealth is that. I get to do stuff with the people that I love. That's where you're... Wealth is intangible. There's no dollar amount that says I'm wealthy.
Do you think it's an insecurity with some people to be able to live wealthy?
Sure, absolutely.
I know so many people, they try so hard to prove that they have money and they're doing so well. We all know that they struggle, but they've got to have the new car and the big house and the big vacations and all that. And they're so far in debt, it's unbelievable. They make those probably $1,000 or $2,000 payments for credit cards and stuff like that. It's kind of crazy, but I'm just glad that I've had enough common sense in my life and that I was brought up to believe that, you know, if you believe in yourself, you believe you're doing the right thing, then that's being rich, you know? And
you can be wealthy. You can be wealthy making $40,000 a year. You can be wealthy making $600,000 a year. And it's not what other people think; it's what you think.
Right.
I'm at $600,000 a year. I have this, that, and the other, and these things are fine for me. And I'm content. I'm not stressed out. I'm not freaking out. This is where my wealth is, and these are the people around me. I grew up in a huge family.
Yeah. And you actually have a huger family now.
A lot of my it's even bigger now. Yeah.
More huge.
The family.
Larger.
Huger. The family the family I grew up with, there are people that have lots of money, and there are people that have very little, but everybody was happy because the family didn't care who made what. The family was happy that everybody was able to come by.
Right. So right.
It was, hey, when we play bocce ball in the backyard together, it doesn't matter how much you made last week.
Right.
Didn't make last week. It's we're together and we're being together and having fun.
Did you guys grow up with a lot of family traditions?
Oh, yeah. You know, we used to go to my Uncle Sonny's house, I think every Sunday for years. He had an above-ground pool that was sketchy at best.
a cement pond?
I don't even know. But it was – but he took care of it. It was clean. And, you know, he did well enough that he was able to host every week, every Sunday. And yeah. go to different cousins, different aunts and uncles' places for Thanksgiving or Christmas. And there was always somebody was willing to host and have the whole family over. And we right. would always, it was always a fun time.
Yeah.
And money was never the issue. Everybody brought something.
Sure.
You know, even when they'd come to the rich uncle's house, everybody brought something because that's what we did. It was a family thing. You know, Christmas, everybody brings some kind of dish and we all sit and have just a great fun meal together.
Right, right.
You know, and
that's where I grew up. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I just wish that there were more people who got to have that experience. And I know there's people out there who are hurting and people who have families that are not caring of each other. And it pains my heart that happens, but I can only go with the experience I've had.
Sure.
You know, and I can only wish good stuff for other people at some point. You know, I can't say, you know, I don't even know where I'm going with this, but it hurts to hear the sad stories
of yeah.
people with no family, with no one to count on, or you know, living in a car because no one would take care of them. Well,
sure.
You know, I told you the story about my aunt and uncle and my godparents who used to have, I can't even think of what the disease is, that the same thing that, I can't even think of his name now. All right.
Not Luke.
That's what I get for having too many drinks. Multiple sclerosis.
Okay.
They used to have, I don't even know how Uncle Hank did it, but he would get a van. He actually somehow purchased a van that could accommodate wheelchairs.
Okay.
And I don't know how he did it because he didn't have the money for it. But somehow he acquired this van. And for the 4th of July, now that we're at the 4th of July, we would go to Uncle Hank's house and in his tiny little place in Ferndale with uneven paver bricks in the backyard. And we'd have five or six people in these wheelchairs with musculosclerosis scooting around, you know, with the joystick to control the wheelchair, which
right.
was all they could do. And scooting around. And I remember as a 10 or 11 year old kid, maybe even an 8 year old kid, pushing these guys over these uneven bricks to get them set up so that they could see the fireworks Uncle Hank was going to shoot off.
Sure, sure.
You know, but that's how we grew up. It was like, all right, well, this guy's in a wheelchair and he's got this muscular problem. That's just how his life is, but he's still a guy, you know.
But you grew up understanding respect, right?
Well, it wasn't even just respect. It was just that these are other people and Uncle Hank thinks these are people in his clan, so they're in my clan because I'm in his clan.
Right.
These are my people because they're his people.
Yep.
There was just this overarching, and this might be something that you and I grew up with because we were adopted, that we're just both so willing to accept other people first.
Yeah.
And then if they screw us over, well then, okay, that's a person I'm not going to hang out with again, but I'll accept you first.
Right.
Right.
And it's funny. I have a friend of mine, Richie. He will poke at me once in a while. And he's like, you have this circle of trust. And once you break that circle of trust, you're toast. And I'm like, you know what? It's the truth. But I think it might be a part of being adopted. I always looked out for the best people and, you know, I always wanted to be respected for the person that I was or am, but I don't have tolerance for people that don't have the respect. And when I was growing up, you know, it was always big family things going on. Sounds like much like you guys did.
Yeah.
Dearborn, plumbers picnics and, you know, all the holidays we had together, a big family would always go over to somebody else's house, and we'd alternate throughout the years for the different holidays and stuff. But it taught us a lot of family respect. If our parents or elders asked us to do something, set the table or take the garbage out or, you know, or get the grill started.
You just did it.
It was no questions. It was no back talk. There was no raising your voice, you know, and you just, I don't see the same thing today. I don't see the same. I have a lot of friends that have families, much like I'm sure you do. I don't see that same respect as much as we did when we were younger. It's like there's a loss of respect. It's like it's more about, you know.
I don't even know if it's even just respect. It's just so much as this is how you just take it. To me, it was always just second nature. It's just, well,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah. My uncle asked me to do this, and I love him, so I'm doing it.
Right, duh. Right.
There's it wasn't even just necessarily a respect thing. It was just this is what families do. We take care of our own.
But the respect was kind of unconditional. I mean, the respect was always it was.
I guess what I'm saying is the respect was always there. It was never something that I thought about and said. It was never something I thought about and said, well, I'm doing this out of respect. It was just, yeah, I just do this because.
It was the right thing to do.
The respect is that underlying thing. It, as a kid, I didn't have a term for it. I just did it because that's what you do. You know?
I'll
call it respect, yeah. I'm with you now.
Yeah, I got friends that have kids, and they're like, "Oh, I gotta go." You know, and this is I'm talking to the people that I know that have the kids. They're like, "Oh, I gotta go home and cut the lawn." And I'm like, "You got two kids at home that are in their late teens, early 20s. Why don't they cut the lawn?" And they'd be like, "Oh God, get them to cut the lawn." They're like, "Please." I'm like, "If I didn't cut the lawn, my ass was grass." They didn't even have to ask me if the grass got long. I went out and cut it, edged it, blew it, whatever. Watered the plants. It was always done. But I did that out of respect. My parents put the roof over my head, fed me the food. I knew I was going to college. I went to a Catholic private school. They gave me everything I ever needed, you know?
And you just do what you're supposed to do. All right. So what's this other topic now? I think we've bogged this one enough.
Yeah. Well, I was going back. This one, I mean, this one could go on forever, but it's how video has changed our perception of I'm drawing a blank.
Is it how we take news? Is it how we take music?
So we got everybody's got most of us have smartphones with video cameras, and we've got all these outlets as far as Facebook and all these social media outlets that upload videos into their format. And we're catching glimpses and bits and pieces of all these things that happen in people's lives. And my question is this, it's that we might have 5% of the people that actually use their video camera every day to upload this stuff to make a point, but it seems to be that how can I say this? It seems to
I don't
be
know, say it.
You know, I'm thinking. I want to make sure I paint the picture correctly. Is that
paint it?
Even though what we see on video through our social media outlets may only be a fraction of the percent that actually happens in this world, it gets so much publicity. The high majority of people think it's the norm. Does that make sense? In other words, this might happen one out of a million people, but 5 million people watch it, and they think it happens all day long, every day, and it's just a reoccurrence. It's crazy. In other words, there was a couple in Lake Orion. I watched the video. I watched it twice.
I didn't see the video. I heard about it, actually.
I don't want to talk about it too much, but two different set, a mother and a daughter, and then a husband and wife going at it, and they went at it for like a few minutes back and forth. It was a racial thing, and then a couple is trying to back out of the parking lot to leave, and the other lady runs behind the car to get in back of it and almost hits her. And so the lady gets out of the car and pulls a gun on her. Like, get away from my car. Get away from it. Because this lady wouldn't leave her alone. And I have a CPL. I know the legal issues of pulling a gun out if you're a CPL holder, or if you just have a gun in possession, which you're allowed to, but you can't. If your life is not in physical danger and you pull a gun on somebody, yeah, there's going to be some repercussions of it, right? But I'm saying that happened. One little thing happened in the state of Michigan, and it's going to get broadcasted throughout the entire country. And I'm just saying the amount of people that look at that one little video, I think when they take it all in, it makes it look like it happens everywhere all the time. And it paints this picture, this racial divide. And this, it's like, it's almost like, I'm not really sure how to say it, but it's like, it's just, it's too much too often. And you're only getting a blip of the story. So all these stories come out with a blip, and they're just blasted out through nationwide or worldwide almost about all these things that happen racially, or maybe even not racially. And I don't know. It just.
There's something. Well, I think I blame CNN.
No, I blame CNN too. I think the younger generation, though, that everybody's got their noses into Facebook and all these different news reporting kind of social media outlets, that you could sit there and scroll through and watch all these things happen day in and day out, where it's probably a fraction of a fraction of a percent of people, but because it gets broadcasted in such a large scale, it almost makes it look like it happens all the time everywhere. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and
it's like it's changing times. It's like everybody gets so riled up about a protest that's gone bad, and like those two people, I think they were in Louisiana or Mississippi or somewhere down there. There was some kind of protest going on, and the people came out, and one guy had a rifle, and the other lady, the wife had a pistol, and they were pointing them at everybody. It clearly didn't show that the people were in any kind of danger. They were sitting on their property. Nobody was coming after them, but they're kind of waving their guns at everybody. It's like, what's going through your head as a homeowner, as somebody holding a weapon like that? What's going through your head? You think you're going to get bum rushed by all these people and they're going to, you know, steal from your house or something? Or I'm not saying it can't happen, but I'm saying more than likely it probably wouldn't, because it's just a protest about Black Lives Matter, you know? It's been going on for a long time. So, I don't know. Any thoughts on videos, on your video camera, phone? Do you video, Bill, at all?
Just, you know, with the kids and the family and stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, do you all the other things.
Do you find
I'm going to tell you this. I got to cut you off just for a second.
Yeah.
My battery is not working right now.
Are you losing juice?
I've totally lost juice. So there's going to be a point in the next, I don't know, 12 to 14 minutes where I just go out completely.
Yeah, we're at a minute 18. So if you want to talk for a few more minutes, we'll wrap it up. We'll go on
Everything I'm trying here is not working. I've got my portable power that doesn't seem to be working. I tried plugging into the wall while you were talking there. It's not working. I think my phone's dying.
Is your iPhone 5 finally giving up?
Finally, yeah. Actually, it's a 6. But you know, and
I'll tell you what,
it's charged.
I just cashed in my 8 for an iPhone 10 or 11. Biggest mistake I ever did.
Yeah,
this thing doesn't charge right. I missed that little button down below where you can – the Siri button, whatever. So anytime you upgrade, upgrade to an 8. I love my 8. I wish I still had it. I was trying to get it back, but they wouldn't give it back to me.
I love my 6.
Yeah.
I think this thing is great. I just wish the power would stay longer.
Yeah.
That's just one of those things. So, you know, whatever. It is what it is, you know? What am I going to do?
Right, right, right.
Hey, what's your plans for the weekend?
Tomorrow I've got, I'm going to wake up. I need to start walking, and it'll be a conversation for our time. Right. it is, it's actually a long story, and I'll tell you offline. But okay. Walking is a part of my program tomorrow. And then my mom has the ability to give discounts, General Motors discounts through the purchase of cars. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. my cousin got a discount for a truck. And the same cousin that bought that piece of property out on Lake Huron, he wants to come by tomorrow at 3 o'clock and thank my mom with some cold beer and flowers and stuff.
My mom is nice. Yeah.
Yeah, my mom's like, well, you know, it's hot and there's no AC and whatever. But I'm a schmoozer, and, you know, my cousin.
Yeah, just go hang out.
We haven't seen each other in a while. So
wear your mask. You'll be fine.
Yeah, so I'm going to get over there tomorrow morning early. I've got the garage to clean out a little bit, and then I've got that's about it. Walk, clean up my mom's garage. We fixed up. I got some things to do around the house eventually. What's
nothing
it cools
crazy.
Mom. Yeah,
nice
just kind of
relaxing weekend.
I hug my mom. I tell her I love her every day, and it means
there
a lot
to me.
And that's why I go over there. And it's about it. I was supposed to buy a motorcycle. And I know it's a crazy thought, but I didn't. I held off.
My brother told me a long time ago, after I sold my motorcycle.
Yeah.
There are two types of motorcycle owners.
Tell me.
Those who've had accidents and those who will have accidents.
No, I know. I know. I think
it's
a change in life.
Yeah, you know, and all I'm saying is I'm not telling you no, because I'm not that friend. But what I'm telling you is, if you end up doing it, just be careful.
You know
people
what?
Don't see you. I rode my motorcycle up from Florida.
Yeah, you put it all over the place, didn't you?
Yeah, I rode it up from Florida up to go see Willie. In Michigan, and then home. But you know, and I rode that thing everywhere, but. The thing you got to be aware of is people don't see you. You have you've got to be the one that knows where everybody else is. And that's just, if you're going to ride a motorcycle, you just got to assume they don't see you and be the passive driver and let them cut you off. There's nothing you can do about it.
You know where I live, it's kind of a small little town.
Yep.
I have no intentions on taking it on Woodward, Telegraph, Gratiot, any of
the big roads.
But it's more of a always wanted to have one.
Yeah.
Early Sunday morning, go drive around for a half hour and get the wind in my hair, and then maybe like commute back and forth to my mom's house because I can cut through the subdivisions. But that's really all it's for. Yeah. The bike that I was going to buy was a 1983 Honda Nighthawk.
Those are great.
Yeah, they're like just cool old bikes, and I was going to learn on that and get comfortable and maybe buy something a little bit nicer down the road, but that's all it was. It's just kind of a high-powered moped, you know, just kind of go tool around. But I have no intentions on riding it, like, honestly, like during the day on Ann Arbor Road or – because I know I'll probably get picked off. I know, I mean. So
but, you know, you're big enough. People will see you on a bike.
Yeah. No, I know.
You're not a small individual.
No.
All right. So, I'm gonna do this.
Yeah.
That's Eric.
And that is Bill.
This has been Low Standards and Pours. Thanks for stopping by.
Episode 13.
Hopefully, you had a good time. Listen to some interesting conversation.
Share our podcast.
Share a podcast with anybody that might enjoy a little chat between two buddies just hanging out. Feel free to join us. We will accept phone calls from people any given time. If you decide that, hey, we're talking about something that I want to chime in on, we'll let you. We're not afraid of that.
If there's anything you want to talk about, just let us know. We're happy to talk to you about it.
Eric, I got to go.
Listen. Yeah, have yourself a wonderful weekend. Are we going to get together on Sunday? Are we good for Sunday?
Yeah, we'll do Sunday. We'll do Sunday for sure.
Let's talk Sunday afternoon and figure out what our topic's going to be. Maybe we'll spend more on videos. Maybe we'll just do whatever you want to do. So it was a pleasure having everybody. I hope everybody shares this and enjoys the podcast. And, Bill, I will talk to you on Sunday.
Rock on, baby.
All right, rock on, sister, brother, whatever. Love ya. See ya.
The goddamn thing. Just hang up on me, will ya?
All right, bye.
Hang up, will ya? Hang up already.
Oh,
Hang up. Hang up. God damn. I have no control. Will you hang up? You hang up. No.